bring the meeting to order, having advanced the clock 5 minutes. And today we had hoped to have Ron Lynn to come here and to give us the budget overview from the governor's standpoint. However, his children are ill and he was unable to attend today. He will come back later on. Rather than cancel a meeting, I asked Jay Hogan and Bob Grogan to talk to us about some of the matters that they've discovered working in the governor's budget, and also to talk to us about the possible approach on the matter of setting a budget ceiling, which we are bound to do by resolution by reason of last year's legislation. So we'll talk about that and what we're going to do about it. Also, we'll hear Jay's overview of the budget, and also we'll hear from Bob Grogan about some other matters that pertain to omissions, I believe we call. Mr. Hogan.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Why don't I go ahead and have Bob do the omission first, since it's then we could just carry on and he could get on with his other business, but this was a very interesting one.
Okay.
Yeah, I'd like to hand out something first. Mr. Chairman, the thing I've just handed out is a copy of page 7 of the governor's budget address, and I've underlined near the top where he states that accordingly, I propose that the fund's prospective FY79, $18 million total, we plan a total of $10 million for fisheries, agriculture, hydroelectric development, and efforts to expedite land advance. Well, Jay and I got to looking at the budget in detail on Saturday, and we found that in fact, only $5 million shown in the governor's budget to be appropriated from the Renewable Resources Fund. And we got to wondering where the other $5 million might be located. And on the next legislative day, the governor introduced a special bill, which is thing you have on the second page of the handout, SB 413, and it comes to $4,793,000. Now, the upshot of this is that this bill, which was introduced the day after the budget bill, should have been in the budget document. So it's understating the budget by $5 million. If you want to take the governor at his word on page 7, that is that $10 million will be appropriated from this fund. What it really means is that you will have to find that additional $5 million out of, what's the title of that thing, Jay? That
okay.
Additional appropriations amount, which amounts to $45.7 million, and it's set aside by the governor to cover supplemental salary increases for contracts not yet negotiated, new legislation and legislative adjustments.
Bob, that's a chart on page 7 of the governor's budget document where he had this additional appropriations, 35.5 set aside. And he really doesn't have 35.5, he has 30, because he's already got a use for 5 of them.
That's probably the best way to consider that's where the $5 million comes. Otherwise, the only other way to think about it would be that part of the governor's program stated in the budget message are not funded in the budget, but they're actually should be funded out of special legislation. So in any event, you're $5 million short.
You could also, I suppose you could also look at it as being an invitation of the legislature to fill up that $5 million, however, to really meant that or not.
You're speaking, wait. You're speaking specifically the renewable resource bill now.
That's right.
Yeah.
Chairman, basically what it was, is it was probably a relatively last-minute decision to go ahead with the five, and the budget document itself was printed or at the printers or something like that, so they went ahead with that as written and distributed it, and distributed the bill. But in the message, it clearly refers to it as a total piece.
We felt that was fairly significant in that in your general fund allowance, if you will, in the appropriation, additional appropriation money, it would result in about a 15% decrease in the amount that the finance committee really had to look at there. So that's the reason for bringing it up.
Yeah, on that table, he has 35.5 million available for such things as future appropriations, supplementals now being requested, salary increases for employee contracts not negotiated, and new legislation that is expected to pass this session. All that's crammed into 35.5, but in reality, all that's crammed into 30, because 5 has already been plugged for the barley project.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Additionally, if you crank out those items that Jay just read off that you'd normally consider overhead type of items that the legislature really doesn't, you know, they oversee but really don't have that much to do with, you can see it would really be a terrific percentage decrease on the funds that remain. I don't know what that figure might be, Jay. Do you have any idea?
No.
If you carve out $5 million out of the remainder that's left for legislative activity, it's a big chunk of it.
Right. We don't know what his supplementals will be total, and we don't know what the total run of salary increases would be. But let's just, for argument's sake, say that those two things amounted to 20 million, leaving 15 free. Well, it isn't 15 free, it's 10.
Jay, there was back two or three years ago, this tangentially related here, but there was a great hoorah about the timing of public employee contracts, when they were signed and that kind of thing, because you couldn't tell, you know, if you tried to anticipate, then they just look at that and say, well, we know we'll get that much, or and if you let it go, well, then you had the problem of coming back later on and back funding. Are those guys doing anything on the third floor? Are they still pursuing that at all, or they've just kind of forgotten about that, or what?
Mr. Chairman, the answer is sort of yes and no. Some of the contracts now come due at the end of the calendar year,
yes,
so that the legislature has firm contract figures before it adjourns. It does not have them when it comes into town.
Yeah.
But the Marine Union ones are still in July. They're still July, August. They're still exactly confront you with this kind of problem. You put money in,
yeah,
and you're waving a flag as to this being available. You don't put money in, then you have to fund it by supplemental the next year. So the Marine Union ones, I don't know what attempts have been made, but they certainly haven't been successful because they're still running.
What negotiations have been? When are overall negotiations with that? I would imagine it seems to me the last time they had a contract, they left open. It was a long-term contract, but didn't they leave open a wage for? In other words, they reopened one or two things.
The general government one was signed last year. That's sort of the base one for normal run state employees. And that one, this year, is negotiating health benefits, as I understand it, but that's all.
Uh-huh.
No monetary. And that would come up for overall negotiation, I think, next December. So I would guess, in line with what you're concerned about there, I would guess that a late calendar year negotiation period, November, December, with new contracts, hopefully by the first part of January, would be about the best you could hope for.
does that mean that we have, that we will have for the first time the figures in order to crank it into the FY 79 budget proceedings, except for Marine Highway, we have the figures? Well, won't that in itself build up the total budget figure, just because in prior years we've sat around and let that...
You already have some of that built in, because in those cases where contract increases were known, as they were for the general government contract, they have already built those increased amounts into their budgets. I don't know what the percent would work out to be, but let's say that maybe half of the budgets that you will see already have the appropriate salary increases worked in. I think that's probably a fair figure. Maybe it's a little bit more.
Uh-huh. Well, that's that automatic cost of living.
Yes. So those, that's right. This is a time when you're working with more solid numbers than you've worked with before.
Yeah, okay. I didn't mean to get in on that, but okay.
But anyway, just to review, some of the numbers came in a little bit in the middle of that. On page 7 of the executive budget document, the governor has summarized the budget, and around the middle, under that line labeled additional appropriations, there's allegedly $35.5 million to cover such things as salary increases not yet negotiated, supplementals, and new legislation. And what Bob has pointed out is that the governor in his message talked about a $10 million program from the Renewable Resources Fund, but only $5 million of that was included in the budget, and the other $5 million came in a big chunk in a Senate bill the day after the budget was delivered.
Would that matter, though, because he was talking about general fund?
That is general fund.
Renewable resources?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
End run of the budget. That's what he told us when he asked all our bills.
Is the renewable resource fund a separate fund?
Mr. Chairman, it is a separate fund, but it's that overflow arrangement. In other words, the amounts are available for appropriation in the first year. The 5% figure that comes off the top from the mineral revenues, whatever that amounts to in a year, and do you know what that's supposed to be this year?
They got $19 million in the
pool
now, haven't they?
All right, $19 million. That whole $19 million the first year is available for appropriation. If it's all appropriated and spent...
Somebody open the door for that deadbeat out there.
Then no money goes into the fund. If say this $10 million were all that were appropriated from the renewable resource monies, then the remaining $9 million would go into the renewable resource fund. So it's available for appropriation in the first year that it's that it comes out of revenues.
Mr. Chairman,
an hour and a half.
Mr. Howie.
Okay, I don't want to start something here that we can't finish, but I found out what happened, what the final renewable resource bill looked like after it was passed in, 4 years ago, 5 years ago? You worked pretty close, and so did Bob. And I'm sure that our intent was, and I think the original bill will show that, the fund was supposed to accumulate revenues at the rate of 5%. Till it got to a point of $250 million. And that money, then the interest of that money would be used to pay of course I was selfish. I thought it should be used only for salmon hatches and things like that. However, it's broader than that now. But the way the bill reads now is that it will accumulate $250 million. And then it'll terminate, if I read it. Russ, weren't you in Anchorage when we talked about that? And now, Russ and I and Terry are on the subcommittee, on the renewable resource bill. And we were going to get together tomorrow night and see if we could put some things together. I don't know how the rest of you feel, but I feel very strong that that fund ought to have the ability to accumulate. We shouldn't spend it all. We ought to attempt to attain that goal of $250 million and use the interest off of it to pay cash or the overhead of enhancement projects or reforestation projects. And lo and behold, tourism qualifies, and I see they got money appropriated for that in the budget document. And I'm really upset about the way that's going. I'm going to try to straighten it out and get it back along to what the original concept was. Because I don't want to see any more bond issues for fish hatcheries. They've got $30 million worth on, they haven't completed yet. And they've got another 20 in this. We're going in the wrong direction. I'm getting away from what we're principally talking about now. I think I'm going to have a lot more to say later on as to what I think that particular legislation meant when we passed it. Because this damn departments who think they can tap it are already going after it. And we'll never even, they'll have the $19 million down the tube before this year is over. So we'll never get nowhere, so we don't put a halt to some of the ideas that got in their head of how to spend it now.
Mr. Mookin.
Well, I have 2 points. One is, of course, I agree with Ernie. I think that the proposal the governor has really violated at least the original legislative intent, and I think a lot of the intent that we've been working on for a whole year. So I think we should do something about that. But the question I have, and sort of a technical one, is shouldn't the 35.5 when added to the 879.3 add up to 914.8? And I see there's $1 million difference. So, see, I'm getting that.
Sure.
Because the 35 is this. The same words here, this is for future appropriations such as new legislation, etc. And he says, when amount to 914.8 when adjusted for all anticipated future special appropriations supplemental to cost of new legislation. I guess they just lost $1 million in translation. Well, it doesn't. 879 and hey, I can add it. But 879.3 and 35.5 don't add up to 914. They should add up to 915. I mean, it's probably just a technical error, but I think we ought to find that $1 million.
Is it added by another million?
Yeah. Okay. Just for the
maybe
benefit,
it does. I don't know
what that means. Just for the benefit of those who came in late, Ron Lynn was supposed to give us an overview of the budget from the standpoint of the third floor, and his one or more of his children were taken ill and he couldn't make it today. So we'll have to have a presentation later on. In the meantime, we're hearing from Jay Bob Grogan. You want to hear from some aspects of the budget we better keep our eye on. Clark, you had a...
Yeah, I have a question on this one statement. The governor is talking about putting $10 million into these renewable resource areas, fisheries, agriculture, so forth. But as I recall, that $10 million that he's proposes to add to the permanent fund is really from this renewable resource development allocation. Isn't there a conflict? I understood him to say one day that he was going to put $10 million of the remaining portion so that he was actually only using 8. Which is it, do you know, in the actual?
Just a moment. Mr. Chairman, he has a... I think he was assuming an overall budget surplus over revenues because he's assuming a budget of 914.8 and the revenues were... Yes, he was assuming a 13, it's over on page 8, a 13.7 surplus. Of that, I assume he was planning to take $10 million. I don't This is just assumption on my part. I don't know what he was really gearing at, but I was assuming that he was talking about the general fund surplus, the general revenue surplus, using 10 million of that.
He's saying there's going to be, revenues accruing in fiscal year 79 will be 13.7 over 914.8, is that what he's saying? Is that square with Milt's projections? I thought we were looking at a deficit situation, even though there was a surplus.
So I would assume then.
Negative surplus.
Assume, Mr. Chairman, then that according to these figures, 9 million plus would go into the Renewable Resources Permanent Fund, and 10 million additional would be appropriated to the Alaska Permanent Fund.
Well, that's what's not clear.
I know it's not clear.
I'm assuming him to say that he was going to take the surplus. In fact, well, there were a bunch of us had lunch with him, and he mentioned that that's what he intended, was to take the surplus from the Renewable Resources Fund and put that into the permanent fund for surplus cash management purposes. I don't know. That's why we need to get this story straightened out.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I believe the story is entirely up to the legislature.
Yeah. Well, it'd be nice to know what his position is.
Incidentally, it's been further suggested by veteran legislative observer that we also refer to surplus as a positive deficit.
See ya.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, there
beyond the university accounting system.
There have been some interesting things that I thought that have occurred in relation to the overall budget, and I thought I'd like to take a few moments to acquaint the committee with them. One of them was the document that you signed this morning. I think if you have your bill files for House Bill 627 in your desk, the General Appropriations Act, I think this document is already in there for you. But basically what happened is this. The letter transmitting the budget bill is normally a little or no consequence. It just simply says, in accordance with certain provisions of the Constitution, I'm giving you a budget bill. But this time it contained an interesting statement. I'll read it in full. It says, for purposes of clearly identifying for the legislature, this is Governor writing, federal program receipts, they are set out in this bill as appropriations. Even though in most instances the state treasury is merely a conduit from the federal treasury to the program involved, and the federal money is not, as a general rule, subject to the state legislature's appropriation process. This was the first time I have ever seen this statement used that way, and of course it relates directly to the suit that the legislature is currently involved in, Budget and Audit Committee versus the governor. What it says is that he puts the legislature on notice that although the federal monies are in the appropriation bill, it's just simply as a matter of record-keeping convenience that they're not thereby appropriated. In the letter, the three chairmen cited the provisions from the Constitution, one that says that a budget shall be presented setting forth all proposed expenditures for every department, office, and agency of state government. And it says it shall be accompanied by an appropriation bill to authorize the proposed expenditures. Right below that is a section on expenditures. It says no money shall be withdrawn from the treasury except in accordance with appropriations. Now we, on our side, have difficulty reading that in any other way than what it says. This seems to be a source of confusion for some. And then that plus the fact that there has been a relatively recent U.S. Supreme Court decision that dealt with a squabble over appropriation of federal funds and Missouri, I believe. The Supreme Court held that in this particular case, Missouri was within its rights. So that's an interesting thing. I think the committee's going to have to be aware of this scuffle throughout the course of your deliberations, because the Attorney General does seem to be inclined to want to do whatever possible to whittle down the legislature's authority in the appropriations field.
Okay.
So that letter went in today. The
incidentally, if there are any members of the committee that feel like a mere conduit, please let me know. Otherwise, we'll proceed in the way we always have.
Mr. Chairman,
where's Freeman?
There's quite a number of times that I feel like a conduit, but that doesn't mean I have to like it, and it doesn't mean I have to do anything to acquiesce or approve of it for my part.
Mr. Chairman, another item of interest came up. House Bill 604 was the first of its kind, referred to the House Finance Committee. There are others that have come since then, and there probably will be others to come to follow. 604 is entitled An Act Making FY78 Appropriation Adjustments. What this means is that going back to last year, this legislature last year passed an act that allowed for three kinds of adjustments to the budget. Increases to the budget, establishment of new positions, and the transfer between appropriations to be administered by the Budget and Audit Committee. This is, of course, the basis of that suit that I referred to before. The governor contends that all of these are unlawful powers. And so he has introduced, since the law reads that there shall be no transfers between appropriations unless approved by the Budget and Audit Committee, and the governor says that's not constitutionally possible, what he's done is he's submitted a series of bills, 604 being one of them, that would affect transfers between appropriations by actually changing by amending the General Appropriations Act. I did discuss this matter with the three chairmen involved, the Senate Finance Chairman, the House Finance Chairman, the Chairman of the Budget and Audit Committee. And I don't know what the outcome of that is likely to be, but the first indication was that perhaps these items should be kind of aged, these bills should be aged, and the executive encouraged to submit these as is provided under current law as revised programs. If you'll look, the information attached to this was originally made up to be a revised program. There's the heading right there, revised program request. It was made up by the Department of Labor in November 25th, 1977. So this particular request to shuffle funds has sat around in the executive halls for several months because the Department of Law, the governor, did not wish to weaken their position and submit these as revised programs. What we have then is in essence, state government kind of coming to a halt as far as this efficient type of operation is concerned. If it's important to transfer monies, then you can presumably argue that it's important to transfer monies when you determine that it would be a good thing to do. And that the longer you wait beyond that time, the more you're crimping and hampering the improvement of your operation. So under the system that's proposed by the executive now, doing them all in bill form, when a mechanism exists by law to do them as they appear advisable throughout the year, then one, the legislature can expect, finance committees can expect a substantial increase in their workload in years in the future as they get the host of these transfer bills. And two, they can only occur during the 5 months that the legislature's in session. The rest of the year, they don't go off.
I'd like to comment on that. This bill that we just whisked through here in record time was somewhat related to this. However, it was my understanding anyway. Maybe wrong. It was my understanding that those funds that were made available for this countercyclical arrangement had to go through the normal legislative appropriation process. And the budget, whatever else it is, I think that wouldn't include the Budget and Audit Committee treatment. I think we had to put that through. That point was raised on the floor. Russ answered that. But in that particular instance, a regular appropriation was required. These other things, very frankly, unless a situation like that, I'd be inclined to trash it. I'll let them worry about the damn things through the Budget and Audit Committee or figure out some other way do it on their own. We're not going to surrender the legislature's authority on this line, I can tell you that.
Can the Budget and Audit Committee only consider what's presented to them?
Mr. Chairman, yes, that's it doesn't explicitly state that in the law, but the way it reads, it says they'll be approved by the governor and the Budget and Audit Committee, and the tradition of the operation indicates that the governor traditionally submits a document and it emanates from the executive department. The Budget Committee acts yes or no on it. Also, I might add that in response to that, not only is that the traditional and presumed from the way the law is written course of procedure, but an unwritten but also traditional method is that the Budget and Audit Committee does not change any of these revised programs that are brought before them. They simply say, yes, it is approved, or no, it is not approved. They do not amend it as you might a bill during the course of the regular session. So the two traditions are, one, that they're submitted by executive agencies through the governor to the committee, and the committee acts on them, and the committee either says yes or no, but is not empowered with the ability to raise, lower, or adjust.
Mr. Chairman, following up on that, then the Budget and Audit Committee couldn't take the lead, say, from 604, whatever the number of that bill is. And since it is really, in essence, a revised program, so the Budget and Audit Committee couldn't just say, well, they'll treat it as if it was a revised program and on their own make a decision, yes or no, or without having to have to go through the committee process.
Chairman, we could try it, but of course the document would lack the governor's signature, and as long as he failed to sign it, then one of the two required signatures would be missing from the document, and it would be of no value. The committee did try that once. They did initiate a revised program, and it caused a great flurry of excitement and to show that he was the king of the heap. The governor then reintroduced another one with his signature on first, and the committee duly approved it at a subsequent meeting. So that's the history of the Budget and Audit Committee going first. So those acts are interesting. As I say, they have never been seen in these halls before. They're called, or perhaps they were called, appropriation adjustments. In House Bill 627, the General Appropriations Bill, you have yet another innovation. On the chart on page, it's unnumbered, but it should be page 3. It gives you a list of the various bond funds are appropriated. 78 University of Alaska facilities bonds, health facility bonds, fish and game facility bonds. What the governor has proposed doing, which again has never been done before, is to appropriate the monies from bond sales in the General Appropriations Act. His reasons for doing this are that he feels, one, it makes the budget more meaningful, all the money that's important, really, and is thought about in a budgetary sense, is included in one bill. Also, the free conference, these again are reasons that the governor's office has put forth. The free conference on the budget would then consider the bond fund monies in addition to all the other monies in the budget. What I think is the principal reason for doing this is not usually stated, and that is that the executive suffered somewhat of a reverse at the hands of the Supreme Court this past summer, and that the Alaska Supreme Court ruled that the governor cannot line item reduce the bond authorizations. He may strike the whole authorization, or he accepts it as written, but he cannot pick and choose within a bond authorization. Now, the Department of Law argues that, well, that only deals with the authorization, but I'm not so inclined to accept that opinion. I think the court might likely, if they came back and were asked on appropriations within, that might come up with the same reading, because why would it make any sense to submit a complete authorization to the public and have them either reject or approve it, but allow the governor to go whittle down appropriations within that? But again, that's purely speculation. But I submit that is the real reason why bond proceeds are in this bill.
Mr. Hogan, did the administration supply any kind of term for that? We're getting a dictionary together here, so we know what we're talking about from here on. I got four free entries already this morning. Did they put any terms of?
Mr. Chairman, I think it was hoped that that some of these, or perhaps all of these, might slide by and become just normal courses of business without being called to the legislature's attention, but we somehow felt it was not appropriate to allow that to happen.
Well, I think it's a legitimate policy question to face, is mm-hmm. whether the governor should have the right to line item veto a bond issue or not. And if so, or perhaps, I don't know whether the court would agree or not, but perhaps, you know, you could put bond issues, if any, in the general appropriations bill. I do think it's a legitimate question, policy. I don't know how most legislators would react to that, giving up some power that traditionally the legislature has had and plainly the governor doesn't have. You look at it in that light, or you could look at it as to whether it's sound public policy to have the governor whacking away at it after you go home. Some people feel like it's not such a bad idea. It makes you, sooner or later, it makes you look a little better. Anyway, okay.
So that's, again, as Representative Meekins pointed out over here, those bonds listed are bonds that haven't even passed the legislature yet, and that's absolutely correct. All the bonds listed over there, the various 78s, are the bond bills that you will see introduced during the course of this legislature, and he is proposing to make the appropriations from those bonds in this bill, still carrying the authorization for the bond in the separate bills. This there's one thing that has not been highlighted, and of course this could tend to create a relatively chaotic situation at the end of the session if you had half a dozen free conferences on the bond authorizations, and if the free conference committee on the budget missed one or two of them, why, you could conceivably end up with appropriations that are bear no relation to the bond authorization, but that wasn't seen as a great problem.
All right, Mr. Green.
Yeah, Jay, wouldn't we have to clarify too the problem that the bonds aren't approved, voted up or down by the voters until after this bill actually comes into effect? I mean, first July 1st this year, we appropriate these bond proceeds. Does that mean he can dip into another pool and use it? Or what does it mean?
He addresses it in section 7 on page 2. that's all he says about it.
It's also kind of a halting step in the general direction of direct funding.
No.
Which again leads to the other point, in that the chairman has discussed the consideration of kind of getting out of the bond business. I think it's probably safe to say that for every dollar of bond issued, you pay back $1.80 at least over the course of the bond for any capital improvement. The normal reason for bonding is that you don't have the cash. But if Alaska is going to be over the foreseeable future in a position of having the cash, then you wonder what the real advantage in bonding is. Because as I say, over the course of a 20-year bond, we will, at roughly today's interest rates, we will pay back $1.80 for every dollar we borrow.
Politics.
Well, I think it's plain that there are two reasons that are holding up direct funding. One of them is that it makes the year that you begin direct funding of capital projects, the budget looks a heck of a lot bigger than it, you know, than it normally would compared to the previous year's budget. And people who are not too scrupulous about reporting a budget for years will come right in there and say, well, the governor, he's come in and asked for a 30 or 40% increase in the budget. But if it's properly handled and responsibly handled from the standpoint of informing the public, that doesn't have to be a problem. The other aspect of it is business of voting on capital projects, whether there's an inalienable right for there'd be a vote on it. You could handle that. You could provide that all capital projects over a certain amount would be voted on by the public. So there are ways of handling it, those things, and I think sooner that we are going to discuss those in the course of this session, this committee.
I just had a comment on
Yeah, Mr. Green.
Got it. In that discussion, of course, there are two other things that are proposed or advanced for funding through bond proposals, and that is, if your bonding interest, your interest rate is lower than the inflation rate or equal to it, in a sense, the inflation rate is a compound interest, whereas the bond package is simple. In other words, you're just paying it on the principal amount. Plus the fact, as Rader pointed out, there's an arbitrage argument. You can theoretically, the state could make 7-8% on its investments, maybe as high as 10, but we haven't seen that. And in other words, you're paying back the borrowed money at 6%. But that's some policy questions to consider on this.
Mr. Mick.
Okay, could you explain a few things? Is the $285 million, which is about half of, one half of the total $541 million, that under the capital budget there, that's the highway money?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know exactly the main. I would assume that's highway money and aviation money, the biggest chunk. That's what the largest amount of federal capital money is. Yeah.
And then, in this book here, it shows that the, like, for instance, correctional bonds are some about 30 million or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was. I think it's 30 million. But here he's got 1.9. Now, what is it listed somewhere else, or is this something different, or is it under 78 correctional facilities bonds, 1.9 million? And in the large books here, I remember looking it up because I was, having been on the interim committee, I was curious. On page 487 of the Executive Budget Act, he has correctional facilities in this bracketed here, and they added to $30,800,000.
No, 4-4.
And I'm just wondering what the discrepancy is.
Okay. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know, because then again, in his budget bill on page 37, 38, the only thing that it shows for correctional facilities is, you know, 1.9. Mother funds.
Wouldn't that, let's put it this way, that's where it should show. If he was gonna, whatever that bond should be, it should show under where 1.9 is, if it was 22 or.
He must be proposing to just simply hold the rest of that issue in reserve, and just to appropriate it at some later date. That also has been done in the past, we have had, back in the early 70s, we had a couple of bond issues passed where either the entire amount was not appropriated or a portion of it was not appropriated. Some airport bonds and some highways, I think.
You mean, Mr. Chairman? Jay, you mean that you can have the public vote on a bond issue that, and then the legislature still has to appropriate it?
You could. At that time, we've since had enacted a law that Jeff spell out the project, so I don't know what the answer to that one is. We'll have to look that one up. But now, theoretically, before a bond issue goes to the public, it's supposed to have all the projects detailed, both as to name and amount. But in the early 70s, that was not the case, and you could just put an amount on it.
Decide where it goes later. How about if you decided where it was going to go, but you weren't sure you wanted to do it yet? I mean, could you appropriate? I mean, could you send it out to be voted on, and then, for instance, you, in corrections, they may indeed be awaiting the completion of other questions on whether they should be. What type of policy to have would change the architecture.
Yeah, and I think that case you just simply might not be proposing to expend it this year, and so you wouldn't put it in this year's capital budget.
Is this was prepared by the governor?
Yes.
Still here? And do you think this was printed first, and then this? And which one's later?
This is probably later. What is the total?
$30 million. But see, it says specific project selection to be determined.
That must be the problem. That's an unusual way to do it. But this is an unusual year.
That's right. It's an unusual year.
Okay. Well, we'll find out after.
So again, Mr. Chairman, on this one, the options I would presume the committee would want to consider is whether or not they want to continue bonding. I was going to make one more point. Right now, our debt service is running out of the operating budget, is running, I think this year's budget anticipates $55 million. Well, at a bonding package of roughly $250 million, you're talking about $125 million a year, so you're darn near halfway to the total capital expenditures in any given year from bonds, just by virtue of what you're paying in debt service alone. So I think there's a valid policy argument there as to whether this is the year to do something about that. But regardless of what decision you make on that, you do want to keep in mind this setup that exists now in the budget bill where the governor has cut his losses in the court and brought the appropriation out of the bond bill and into the General Appropriations Act where he has a bit more flexibility. On regard to the resolution, Mr. Chairman, the law passed last year that says by the 45th day the legislature shall have passed a resolution setting forth the general fund totals for the budget. We will be having the budget books, the little short form booklets up. The first three went down to the printers this morning, or was it four? We should have them coming back from the print shop starting tomorrow morning, and then dribbling on through the week until they're all done. Just using that one example that Bob cited of the kind of sleight of hand with the $5 million ag program, probably each chairman of the subcommittee might want to get together with the analyst for the program category as quickly as possible and take a quick run through to see if there are any more little hidden items like that. Probably nothing else of that magnitude, but there might be some other things that, as far as the legislature is concerned, are substantially underfunded or are not included at all. Because the first thing you would probably want to do is come up with a judgment as to how reasonable the total number of dollars of the governor's budget is with regard to your program category. Because each program category is, of course, going to have to lead to the total budget figure. It's my understanding that since the legislature has to pass this, and since 1 week has already gone by, we really only have 2.5 to 3 weeks to get this thing into some sort of recognizable form. Of course, it would depend upon what the legislative leadership felt the revenue picture really was for the given year and what the amount of money to appropriate was truly going to be. So you would want to have your revenue committee take a look and for you and see what is likely to be available for appropriation. But each subcommittee chairman would really want to take a quick overview look at the program category and see if at least the basic numbers, not how much goes here, there, and everywhere, but the basic numbers appear to do the job of covering the program category as you see it and don't leave any glaring holes. And then we would come back together with a total that, Mr. Chairman, were you thinking of just putting a figure in, or were you thinking of trying to spell out the program categories?
Well, I don't have a statute in front of me, but my recollection is all the tentative allocations between program categories, which I certainly meant at the time. It was my understanding that would not be binding, but the total figure would be. But we wanted to get some kind of general notion of where we were going to put the money, but that as between program categories, it wouldn't be binding on the legislature. That's the way we're going to treat it anyhow. Okay, what I'd like to do about this resolution is, we don't really have a resolution in front of us, but what I would propose to do would be to have the committee introduce the bill on the floor with a committee report attached, which the only alternative would be to introduce a resolution with an arbitrary figure in there, and I just don't want to do that for all sorts of reasons. So I prefer to introduce it with a committee report attached. What I'm going to do is to ask the subcommittee on ways and means to come up with a proposed resolution in accordance with the statute to present to the committee, and I'd like to have a report from the Ways and Means Committee by February the 30th. That's about 3 weeks of working time they have. It's the rest of this week, all next week, all the following week. If that's not enough time, we'll just extend it because this is our first time with this. And we'll probably be
I don't know until I get my feet into it, but on the allocations, are we going to let that ride beyond the time? In other words, the allocations really don't make too much. I mean, the subcommittees can start doing, coming up with figures, but until we get a revenue picture, it's hard to know what figure we're allocating within. Are we going to just, I think we have to think about how we're going to work this together, because I have no idea what the individual subcommittees will make.
I would, let's try this. I mean, if it's okay with you, let's work on the basis that the subcommittee chairman will try to get some kind of tentative numbers to Clark on or before or during his consideration of this resolution, and he's going to have to fit it in there. In other words, If he has to pick arbitrary numbers, not really arbitrary, but if he has to whittle down or add on to some subcommittee chairman's numbers in order to come up with a final figure, I think that's okay. Because, as you say, the allocations for budget categories simply isn't binding. It's the only reason for it is to give somebody some idea of how much money's going in there.
That's true.
And let's try that. We will have to have, people are gonna have to have some notion of what, how much money they're gonna need in order for us to come to any kind of conclusion about the top figure. I'd also like to break it down into operating and capital budget summary. Russ?
Well, I'm sure I know the answer to this. I just wanna ask sort of.
Could you tell us the answer first?
I'll tell you the answer first, you guess the question. When we pass the resolution, it's gonna say no, can't exceed a certain figure, right? It sets a ceiling. But we can come in lower if we manage to do that.
Sure.
Now we have to be round about it.
And, you know, you never can tell what'll happen to it. I mean, it might go to the Senate and disappear, or, you know, I don't think it'll happen. I think that it's gonna work. Doug will have to fill in the statute. Make sure it does work.
I don't recall the question. If we don't meet the deadline, what's the penalty?
Well, we're all taken out at noon and quit.
Cooper's gonna take us all to dinner.
Probably nothing happens, you know, except a certain amount of public pressure.
Well, Steve?
Yeah.
I got a question to ask. What about those bills, personal bills? I have one in for only one reason, a general appropriation bill, substantial amount of money. I think that if they don't get to this committee or they aren't acted on by another committee, that it's a personal borough. Well, what happens if they don't get those things in time for the Ways and Means Committee to consider it and put included or excluded from that total figure?
Oh, yeah. I think we just have to leave some room for that.
Now, do you want to have a new legislation allocation? I mean,
let's look at the statute.
Let me make it clear. Well, now, the bill I introduced, and I had no idea of ever getting that kind of money. I'm trying to bring up a problem we created last year in that school fund, where those districts that were heavy in debt, of course, they came out smelling like a rose. But those committees, the community that had no debt, and still plan to pass bond issues for schools and school renovation and all these things, won't qualify under that bill for principal and debt retirement. I forget the number of the bill, but it's a pretty substantial question in my district. There are those that don't pay nothing for the schools, and we pay them maintenance and overhead and the debt service on bonds and everything else. There are others, like the community I live in, they're head over heels in debt and coming out smelling like a rose. And then there's a community like Wrangell that has no debt, no school debt. The reason they don't have debt is because a bond issue failed, because it was apparently too large or whatever the reason was. They will get no relief under the existing law. And I talked to the chairman of the S committee about that, and he plans to bring in something put together, get all the bills together. The governor's talking about, he had a program last year where he was going to bring in front-end money and things like that. Well, his bill didn't go nowhere, and that bill came on his desk, and he signed it. And to back up, it's going to be some problem, you know.
Where is it? It's down the hatch.
Well, I've talked to Charlie about it. He understands, I think you know what I'm talking about. At least Charlie understands it real well, and he's concerned too. But he wants to get all of the bills in one package and then see what in the world we can work out legislatively to straighten the whole mess out so we put people on par rather than some get and some don't.
Well, if you put enough people on par, maybe.
Set the law, Charlie.
I think, yeah.
How much, in relation to what Ernie's talking, how much money do you think's involved in this? I know that Kenai Peninsula is $1.6 million. They didn't get all of it.
No, I understand that too. I looked at the figure and the way I look at it, is funding it at something, the rate of about 85% of what the real figure is. They haven't got their money yet. It has to be appropriated by legislature annually.
Then once it pays cash, it's true.
Pardon?
Yeah, they pay cash.
Okay, there was another.
They're out $1.6 million in cash.
Okay, well, last week, I mean, okay, the point was how can we consider those kinds of appropriations in the course of considering this resolution? And I don't know, we'll figure out some way.
Well, it's better to think about it now than when we get the problem, because now there's another one that's raised. He says they pay cash, okay, so they are eligible for nothing. Another one had no debt, but plans to have new construction or whatever, and they won't qualify under the law. For those that had debt, they're bailed out. The legislature has to appropriate the money annually, but as I understand, I'm not sure what I'm saying here, but I don't think that they appropriated enough money to totally fund whatever the number of that bill was. Committee substitute for Hospital 89. I know Sam Cotton and I did a tremendous amount of time in that bill. And when we got the free conference, we got into a different situation, but that's beside the point.
Yes, Jay?
Mr. Chairman, it's one of the things that's very hard to do with a resolution like this is to forecast ahead what the end product of the legislature is going to be. And what the committee might consider doing is, I think the wording of the statute is broader than this, but might consider taking a more restrictive approach and stating that in the resolution that at least on this first go-around, the attempt was to address the operating budget and the capital budget as produced here, and to recognize the fact that probably you might do yourself more harm than good as far as instituting this procedure by trying to psych out what the legislature is going to do, what the governor is going to do in the way of budget amendments. You have absolutely no way you can come to grips with that right now.
I think one thing we might do is to inquire as to what's done at the federal level, what the federal U.S. Congress does about that. Of course, that's a full-time body, and we theoretically are not. But we might compare it to that situation and see what they do. They do also have a different appropriation process. That might be the first step, Clark, to get that information to Val or Steve. Well, they're both on appropriations committees.
The other thing occurs to me is, are we going to resolve this cash payment for capital projects before this? And how are we going to allocate capital projects out? Should we bring that issue up?
My druthers, personally, would be to say for capital projects, we put in that gives you the option in case that's the way we decide to go. I wouldn't imagine at all whatever it is $235 million or whatever the bond package turns out to be. I wouldn't imagine that you're going to fund all that in 1 year and set some of them off for next year. So, you know, I would think if you get some reasonable figure for capital projects. Also, possibly put money in for planning of projects that would normally come in, be funded next year. So that seems to be the way that other states go, that use direct funding approaches. They take a certain amount of money and use it for planning of capital projects. So when the legislature passes on those projects, it has some notion of what the options are and what it's going to cost to maintain it and keep the facility operational, that kind of stuff. You know what you're getting into. I mean, you don't have a lot of issues to put in there.
Well, maybe we could, that issue is kind of complicated, but we might be able to, are we going to set a bonding limit? I understand the bill, as I recall, wants the operating, calls for the operating level to be stated. Does it say the same for the capital projects? We need to look at that.
If I recall correctly, it implies the budget bill. So that right now, for instance, the way the budget bill is written, it would include the operating budget, the capital budget, and the bond.
Yeah, well, the bond people tell you there's some magic number. That's different. Well, that would be different than the number that we might set if we're making cash payments.
I think bond issues weren't meant to be included under the heading of that bill anyhow. But if we're going to go to direct funding, then we've got to do it. In other words, what I'm saying is you can still preserve the option to argue it out on a policy standpoint if we just come back and put in the resolution $150-140 million to count the projects. You still have the option to go on to a bond issue, or you can go direct funding and just cover it under the resolution.
Well, I think that issue will be, there'll be a lot of policy arguments on both sides.
Yeah.
I don't know that I want to get into that in the ways and means. Maybe that's something we need to be able
to. I think the whole committee's going to be patient, and the legislature itself. I think the way to bring it to a head would be to put a bill in which would set up a new procedure for funding the capital projects and it would pick up at that time. I think probably I'll do that. I'm going to ask for it to be referred directly to this committee so we can take it. Do it or not.
There's got to be some formula for deciding which ones actually become bondable issues. I don't think you're ever going to talk to the legislature and giving up that pre-election year thing to do. There's got to be some formula. Some projects should maybe be referred to the people. Some, perhaps, for policy reasons, should be cash. We could have some kind of set of criteria for that.
Yeah, there's a lot more stuff there than first meets the eyes. Well, Jay, going to take that diversionary track there.
There's one other item, Mr. Chairman, that I would mention to the committee. We've touched a couple of times on the suit involving the Budget and Audit Committee and the executive branch of government. That suit was heard at the Superior Court in Juneau on the 5th of December. It's an extremely complex case. The Department of Law issued 3 memorandums in rebuttal to ours. We had 3. We also inundated the judge with a stack of additional memos and documents and so on. So I suspect that the case would probably be meditated on for quite some time. But I would assume that the Superior Court would make a decision one way or another sometime during the course of this legislative session. Last year, those 3 bills, there was a 3-bill package, or 3-measure package, introduced by the Budget and Audit Committee. two of which passed. One of them was a resolution that said, pursue the suit. And one was a bill, which is what the suit is about. And the third one was a constitutional amendment that passed the Senate and is now in the House State Affairs. In essence, this constitutional amendment, if put before the voters and approved this November, would wipe out the basis for the suit. Because by one reading, by our reading of the Constitution, the legislature shouldn't have to go through this exercise. It should be acceptable that it can delegate these authorities by statute to a committee of its own choosing. The Department of Law disagrees, and the governor has accepted that position of disagreement. But the constitutional amendment proposed that is in now bill form residing as the Senate bill, it's in House State Affairs, would put that question clearly before the people. It's something that you, as a committee, probably wish to keep in mind. That document does lie there. And perhaps regardless of what the decision of the court is, you might choose to extradite that document from State Affairs. It comes here after State Affairs.
Okay, has anybody got any questions on these matters? I think they're important. It's at least important to people know about. Okay.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Yeah. Okay, I got three questions, Jay, before. The guy that we authorized for the capital budget, what are we doing with that? He ain't here yet.
No, Mr. Chairman. What we are doing with that, the money was used to hire a building contractor to run the cost of construction of facilities at the new capital site. Those figures will be available for committee review. I was using it as a timetable, the original timetable of the Capital Site Planning Commission, which was to have been February 1st, and then was allegedly put back till February 15th. Now, however, the document setting forth costs, estimated costs, and so on, has been released a full month and a half earlier than it was originally anticipated it would be released. What our people did was concentrate on buildings, types of buildings, and we have a kind of a document that would show their assumptions, the assumptions that they use to price out these various types of buildings. And this, as I say, would be available sometime in February.
Okay, do we have any staff capability now through this guy or otherwise to help us with this, with capital appropriations? Are we still
not per se in capital appropriations, other than, in a way, yes, we do. This is the person we contracted with is an East Coast general contractor. And one of the things he mentioned to me when I first discussed the project was what sort of construction scheme they used in Alaska. And one that's come into favor, and oddly enough, one that's recommended by the Roush Corporation to the Capital Site Planning Commission, is what's known as a construction manager approach, whereby you negotiate with a builder. And there's a series of complex savings agreements and so on, but essentially you negotiate with a builder to design a structure for you, and you work out certain mechanisms to try and take advantage of any savings that can be accomplished over the course of construction. what it, it has some of the aspects of low bid, but not some of the aspects, hopefully, that lead you to buy a structure or something that it turns out to have had so many corners cut that it's not a functionally usable building. This is an approach that apparently is used quite extensively in the East Coast and is, they feel, quite manageable. Part of this approach requires extensive pre-project planning done. In other words, the builder, the building firm is on board right from the conceptual design phase up through the turnkey where you turn it over to the agency or the purchaser. And so you have a much greater understanding of what it is you're setting out to design and build on part of all parties than you do under our approach, say, where, example, the Division of Buildings would tentatively design a building for an agency enough to set off specifications. Then it goes out for bid, and then somebody else runs a final design, and then the agency gets involved and they change it around. So you get a whole series of shifts and shuffles that help explain the reason why when you get the thing built, it doesn't relate to the money that was originally appropriated for the purpose, because perhaps the building isn't even the same general style. This might be of some interest in that it might be a reasonable thing to look into from the standpoint of being able to more accurately predict and project the cost of structures, major structures, that the state is going to build, so you don't get into the business, say, of appropriating a $4 million for an Anchorage Pioneers home and find out it's actually going to cost $8 when you're through with it, that kind of thing. So they can help in that respect, and they certainly could look over any project plans that existed. Our problem with that is that normally they usually don't exist.
Okay. Do you know when Ron Glenn said he was going to be available?
He should be in tomorrow.
Okay. Okay. Now those short forms are going to come out all this week.
Right. I would assume we should get justice and protection back tomorrow, or maybe natural resources.
Okay. What I'd like to do, I'd like to ask the committee how you feel about this. What I'd like to do is ask Ron to come in and make that presentation as soon as he's able, maybe tomorrow at 1:15. Now, the committee feel that it's beneficial to have the analysts come in and run down each individual category before the full committee. You feel like that's a useful, is a good use of your time, or would you rather just do it in subcommittee?
Subcommittee.
Yes. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, I feel otherwise my personal previous experience has been when the subcommittee has done some work and they come before the whole committee, the committee has some questions that probably should have been asked previously.
I tend to go along with that, Bill. I think it is useful for the committee itself to have the kind of basic information about these budget categories that will allow you to ask questions when it comes to the full committee. But, you know, we got a time bind here. I tell you what, okay, what I'd like to do is this, okay? I'm going to call these meetings this week with the budget analysts who handle this particular budget categories, and as soon as the short forms come out, I'm going to ask the analysts to make a presentation to the committee. The meetings are optional, okay? So that if you don't feel like it's going to help you much, then, okay, you can take it up with the, with your budget analyst, but it's useful for me, certainly, and it is, I think it is to some of them anyhow. So what we'll do, we'll call the meetings, we'll make the meetings optional, and the people who want that kind of rundown, I do. The people who want that kind of overall look at the budget categories can come and, if you don't want to, that's fine too. I think we won't, that we won't even make them official meetings in the sense of, you know, having recorded audience.
And we keep getting out of getting into detail.
Yeah.
This is the thing that bogs down makes them long, I think, but otherwise I think they're very good.
I don't, in other words, I what I'm talking about is maybe two or three a day.
Yeah.
And finishing up and certainly not past the end of the week. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, if we can get started on the subcommittee as soon as possible.
How about the schedule? Is that going to be arranged so we don't have conflicts?
Well, that calendar up there is what we're using. People sign up both for the room and for the time, so that you don't have a conflict with other members. Now, once again, we're going to have this problem of these other guys who are not on the finance committee who have been asked to participate in this process. They're going to have meetings of other committees and that kind of stuff, and say, well, I can't be there, I've got to be at Labor and Management or HESS or something like that. You're going to have to go right over the top of it. Yeah. You're going to have to do it. You can't, I think you have to make allowances for members of the committee. But, you do your best to get around this problem, but sooner or later you're just going to have to say, well, if you can't make the meeting, that's too bad. We've got to proceed anyway. And that's especially true of some of the categories like natural resources that are of a little more interest and more people volunteering their time on that. I do want the subcommittee chairman to make sure that the other members, the non-finance members, and particularly the minority members, who are attached to those subcommittees, that they know about every single meeting that they know about. And, you know, if they don't come, then that's, you know, their business. But please make sure that everybody knows about every meeting, subcommittee meeting. Otherwise, we get into a problem. Okay. Okay, tomorrow, I guess it's okay, right, Jay? Ron is going to be ready for pretty good tomorrow. Okay, tomorrow at 1:15, we'll have a meeting to ask Ron Lynn to make the presentation that he was going to make today. I would think, what, an hour? Something like that?
It seems to be around about an hour, hour and a half for Senate Finance. He did it there Friday, I think.
All right, let's figure on doing that. Then if we have one budget category that's ready to go tomorrow, we can go ahead with that. But that part of the meeting will be optional, so. All right. Is there anything, Rick?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to introduce two people from Town and Village Council, Fairbanks, Regina Westcott, and Alan Blue, are here. They're gearing up for gas pipeline in the Tok area, especially in through Glen Allen, the interior. And they're here for today and part of tomorrow. And anybody that would like to talk to them about what they're doing, why, that's what they're here for.
Well, welcome. We need them now.
Too bad they couldn't have been here in the first part of the session. We could have talked a little bit about something that Ms. Westcott is deeply interested in, which is the Delta Agriculture Project. And I'll try to brief her as much as I can.
You mean the governor's project?
One of the governor's projects.
One of the governor's projects, right.
Could these subcommittee chairmen announce on the House floor when they're going to meet each day? I think this is...
Okay, yeah. No, I'm going to leave that up to the subcommittee chairman, but it's not a bad idea.
But then there's not no question about when they're going to meet. It's a matter of record.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman?
It isn't always that easy.
But sometimes
you have a meeting, depending on whether you can get some people here, and if they sometimes they. Not keep it a secret. Sometimes it's, you can't always depend on these people from the departments to be here at the time and when you meet them, and sometimes there's some time available. You can get them when you don't expect to.
Well, I think we can work it. I just as long as people understand that that it's important for notice to get out and people on the committee. I don't care whether they're announced or not. We might even put some kind of thing on the blackboard or something down there. I don't care. That's up to the subcommittee chair, however you want to do it. Just as long as it's fair and the people who are on the subcommittee know about the meetings.
Now, Paul, if nine of us different budgets got up and said, we're having a meeting, it would really get ridiculous after a while.
Yeah.
And put it on a blackboard and then let people know at the beginning of, within a couple of days that they can always check on that. You're up here or whatever to find out when the meetings are.
Yeah, I don't think, I think each subcommittee chairman can make his own decision. The only important thing is let people see it.
It'll whittle down.
Yeah.
Aren't you more or less, you subcommittee chairman, aren't you more or less going to set your time so the thing can work in some kind of a functional way? Well, then all you would have to do is develop a schedule and put it in the minority room, and it's entirely up to them to become acquainted with the schedule. And if they're interested, they got no excuse. The time is posted.
Check.
I'd forgotten who was on the minority group that was supposed to be on my subcommittee.
It's in the office. We didn't got it.
Well, I imagine
it's
pretty
good. You didn't show up very much last week, did you?
Mr.
Howell,
you'd be involved in nine budget categories.
Yeah. Well, it's difficult, and we'd like to say that for the members of the minority who are members of the committee here, that is Leo and Ernie, I want to get special consideration because, they can't be every place at once. Is there is there anything further to be taken up at the meeting? Anything to Mr. Swanson?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I intend to have an informal discussion with the people in Fred Division some evening this week, and I'll kind of look at the calendar of what we're proposing, but it'll just be an informal. I want to be briefed and brought up to date on just where we are in each categories in the Fred program. I'll announce what night.
Okay. All right, if there's nothing further, the meeting is adjourned.